We don't look at conference affiliation. Again, we look at the four very best teams. The conference championships are important. If you look at the history of the CFP playoffs, 14 of the 16 teams have been conference champions. But however, we have the flexibility and the discretion to put non-champions in the top four if they are one of the four very best. The selection committee looked at a one-loss Alabama team, that one loss coming against the final ranking number 17, Auburn, in a very competitive game. We compared that to a two-loss Ohio State team, obviously the one loss at home to number two-ranked Oklahoma, but more damaging was the 31-point loss to unranked Iowa. We spent a great amount of time talking about the full body of work. Now that the complete season is in front of us, we have the full body of work. The selection committee just favored Alabama's full body of work over that of Ohio State. And it was consistent over the course of the year as we saw Alabama play week in and week out.
The committee decided that Alabama was unequivocally one of the best four teams. And that was based on Alabama's, obviously, the one loss being on the road at number seven. Ohio State had the two losses, of course, Oklahoma, and then the other, which was a little more damaging by 31 at Iowa. Alabama the committee viewed it as just a superior team. Conference championships, first of all, are a great thing for the student athletes, of course. They'll forever be the Big Ten champion. But the fact is that is one of the tiebreakers that the committee uses if the teams are viewed as comparable. And in this case, the committee viewed Alabama as a step above. There were not any other teams considered for four and five other than Alabama and Ohio State.
They overwhelm all of us, especially those of us who cover college football, with all these half points and 13th data points. And it gets to the point where we overthink it. I think if the three of us sat down, we'd watch games, and you would look at who are the better teams. I mean, forget all this other nonsense. Having gone through this mock process, I mean, it was one of the longest afternoons of my life. I mean, I couldn't wait to get out of there because it's just too much for me.
I was, you know, surprised and disappointed. It felt like, you know, the right thing to do here is to, you know, sort of understand the things that are good. We had a great season. The Buckeyes had a great year. Badgers had a great year. But was disappointed to say I wasn't, wouldn't be honest. At the same time, the committee's got a tough job. I'm not going to relitigate it. I've made my views clear going into the championship game. I thought that our champion would have done enough. And certainly with the other outcomes around the country, I thought we had a very good chance to have our champion in. And we're not the first conference to be outside looking in. And I think they showed great respect for the Alabama program.
I certainly believed and trusted in the integrity of the committee, that they would do their very best to put the best teams in. A lot of good teams, and I'd like to congratulate the other teams that got in and some of the other teams that got strong consideration, but I really do believe that based on a total body of work that our team really deserved the opportunity to be in, and we're very pleased and happy that they did.
Once again, I admire people to do their job. Nothing short of effort. There's a bunch of intelligent people. That's a tough one. I remember I was back the first BCS one when Florida got in, played actually Ohio State, and that was one, I think, the first BCS game separated. The evolution of this thing is out of control. You know, do you go eight games? Do you go, or eight teams? You know, I don't know. I think more than ever, though, this is a March Madness. This is for you wake up in the morning now and that season starts. You're on the clock. And how should they do it was a question. I don't know. I think they probably did the best they could.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza Radio on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. And how do you like it? My, oh my. Some feathers were ruffled, some waves were made, some grimaces were seen, some exhilaration was experienced, and now we have our Final Four. Welcome to the Extravaganza. Thanks for joining us. We're going to open up the phone lines ASAP at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Special treat for you today. Coming up at top of the second hour, about 4:10. We're going to hear from the voice of Yon Buckeyes, the Buckeyes who now find themselves wandering into the Cotton Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, against USC, the Pac-12 champs, who also did not qualify for the college football playoffs. So they will play one another like it was an old Rose Bowl day. You know, Rose Bowl game of yore, but it's going to be in the Cotton Bowl, Kush. Is that accurate?
That is indeed accurate. On the 29th of December, Cotton Bowl.
That's because the Rose Bowl is incorporated into the playoff system.
Right.
They continue to rotate these big bowl games, the biggest of the bowl games, of course. rotating them through semifinal and championship games, and the others continue on as you know, as traditional. So since the Pro Bowl is being occupied by one of the playoff games, you will have the Buckeyes and USC meeting in the Cotton Bowl. So Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, who normally joins us on Thursdays during the football season, he changes his day to Mondays during basketball season. And now that the Buckeyes are going to be done for a while, and they will not play, of course, until the Cotton Bowl, a little over a month about a month from now, Paul Keels will join us to break it down and talk about what happened, talk about the win over Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game, talk about why it wasn't as impressive a win as it started out looking like it might be, and how and if that played a part in the committee's decision not to include the Buckeyes in the National Football Playoff.
And I'm going to go ahead and say we'll probably ask him at least one question about basketball because, quirk of the schedule, it's Ohio State-Michigan night.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? That is perfect, actually. So we will definitely ask him about that. But you just heard the voices of a whole lot of talking heads, some of them more influential than others, with respect to the decision to appoint, or not to appoint, to anoint is a better word, the Clemson Tigers, the number one overall seed in the College Football Playoff. They will take on the number four seed, last team in, Alabama Crimson Tide at 11-1. That's the 1-4 matchup. Your 2-3 matchup features the Oklahoma Sooners and Baker Mayfield and all of his magic combined with all of his attitude and enthusiasm and sometimes over-the-top gesturing and gesticulating against Georgia, which rebounded from a 23-point loss, saved its season. Rebounding from a 23-point loss to Auburn just a few weeks back to get revenge on Auburn in a game that no doubt had some impact on the committee's decision to include the Bulldogs in the College Football Playoff. So that is your 2-3 matchup, Oklahoma and Georgia. The voices you heard included College Football Playoff, what is his title, commissioner or chairman?
Chairman.
Chairman of the committee. College Football Playoff Committee Chairman Kirby Hokut laying it all out, and we'll hear his part of this again in a moment because it's important to understand what he said. Probably more important than the other guys that you heard, but they do lend some insight into the decisions as well. You heard Bill Hancock, who's the executive director of the College Football Playoffs. So the difference there, Kirby Hokut is the chairman of the committee. Bill Hancock is the executive director of the playoff. All right. Paul Feinbaum, ESPN college football analyst with the Southern Bent, clearly. Jim Delaney was the, or is the Big Ten commissioner, talking about the disappointment of Ohio State not getting in. You heard Nick Saban, who was very, gracious and humble and, you know, as would be expected.
When he wasn't lobbying the committee, of course.
Exactly, because that's over. And then Urban Meyer, who I thought was also pretty gracious, acknowledging, you know, it is what it is. He did say that, what was the word that he used, Jim, to describe the scenario, the College Football Playoff scenario? Not chaotic. What did he say? Hold on. Let me hear that again. I got it. Let me hear from Urban Meyer's part of this.
Once again, I admire people to do their job. Nothing short of effort. There's a bunch of intelligent people. That's a tough one. I remember I was back the first BCS one when Florida got in, played actually Ohio State, and that was one, I think, the first BCS game separated. The evolution of this thing is out of control. You know, do you go eight games? Do you go, or eight teams? You know, I don't know. I think more than ever, though, this is a March Madness. This is for you wake up in the morning now and that season starts. You're on the clock. And how should they do it was a question. I don't know. I think they probably did the best they could.
It was out of control I was looking for. Not chaotic. He said out of control. He said specifically the evolution of this thing is out of control. How it has evolved from the BCS, you know, the first time around, mm-hmm. to the College Football Playoff. And now, should the College Football Playoff stop at the four that they have been for the first 4 years, or should they expand it to eight? And he said it is kind of a madness, and he's right. Let me say this as I kind of sort through some of this for you in our opening monologue. And I think the system is messed up. I think the system is somewhat broken. I think the system needs to be fixed. I do not think that this body of committee members should just be allowed to sit in a room and decide the fate of these teams all searching for championships, many of whom are deserving of a shot at this, but obviously most of whom cannot have that shot because they've decided to limit it at four. I think it's almost impossible to ask a small group of people, 13 people, to decide what the merits are of one team that played this kind of a schedule versus another team that played that kind of a schedule, one of whom may or may not have been their fault because they just happen to be in a weaker conference this year than they normally are in, meaning the teams are just down a little bit. Another one because of the based on their non-conference scheduling choices, oftentimes made years ago. How much do we punish? How much do we punish a loss in the first 3 weeks of the season versus a single loss in the last 3 weeks of the season? Isn't a loss? Why is one more damaging than another? Outside of course, final scores, which we'll talk about the Iowa thing some more. How do we measure an opportunity for a team to get revenge on their only loss? Georgia had that opportunity. Georgia lost to Auburn back when they were number one. Auburn then beat also number one Alabama to deserve their shot in the SEC title game, and Georgia was waiting for them and said, have some of this, and came right back at them. Other teams didn't get that opportunity. How do we evaluate whether or not it's fair for one team to sit at home on championship Saturday and put their feet up and watch games on TV while other teams are fighting for their playoff lives? How can one be expected to jump another when they didn't play? Or another one to play and win and not jump somebody that was ahead of them that was idle because they didn't make their conference championship game. All of these things being asked of 13 people in a room to sit down and get right, especially whittling down 128 Division 1A teams, or what we now know as FBS, 128 teams down to four. I just think that's asking a little too much. I think the system is broken. I think there are inherent biases. I think the West Coast is woefully underrepresented in the committee. We do talk about the committee and its makeup, and we have done that in the past week or two. I do think it's also a little bit unfair, quite frankly, that the committee changes its mind on a week-by-week basis as to whether or not the previous week's rankings mattered. Because last week, we heard the committee say, when the penultimate rankings came out, that the margin between numbers 5 and 8 is razor thin, which would mean number 5 Alabama was in a razor's margin of number 8 Ohio State. And if Ohio State won in their Big Ten championship game and Alabama didn't play, wouldn't that be enough to overcome a razor thin margin? You would think so, but it wasn't. Previously, committee members have said last week doesn't matter. There is no 5 and 8 when we re-rank the next week because it's starting from scratch. Which is it? There are so many elements to this. There is no concrete way for every committee member to say this is the way we look at it and this is how we decide. Each committee member may have his or her own philosophy, his or her own, well, I guess they're all males, I think, in this thing, aren't they? Was there one female, Jim? I'm trying to remember now.
No, not this year.
Not this year.
But there have been.
Okay. That each of these committee members has his own criteria for what makes the best team or a team deserving of a spot in the college football playoff. One committee member might think it's the body of work from start to finish, September through December or through November and into December. Best body of work gets you in. Another might say, no, because I don't really care what happens in September. Who's playing the best right now? Who's the best football team or one of the four best football teams going or coming out of the conference championship games? Others say you have to win your conference championship before you can even be considered to win a national championship. Other committee members say, no, you don't. It's just who the best team is at this particular point in time because some conferences' champions are a little bit weaker than others. All of this chaos, all of this dysfunction, all of this guessing. And at the end of the day, despite all of the chaos, despite all of the dysfunction, despite all of the guesswork, the committee got it right. I'm here to tell you on this Monday afternoon that the committee got it right. All things being considered. Now, what does that mean, got it right? Well, if you listened to Golic and Wingo this morning, you found something out that I did not know about, which I found very, very interesting. Cushlin will appreciate this because literally over the course of the last week of talking college football with you right here on the ticket, we had kind of discussed, I can't remember if it was a caller or a guest, who brought up the old BCS formula, which we hated because we said it was nerdball. It was 19 different computer algorithms that calculated everything from final scores to strength of schedule to ball control, who controlled the game more, et cetera, every statistic, offensive rank, defensive rank in the conference and in the country, and mixed it all together to spit out the teams. And they used one human poll. One human poll was added into all of those computer algorithms, and that was the Harris poll. About 125 people randomly, I don't want to say randomly, but selected by the BCS to include, this is how they ranked them, and here's how the computers ranked them, and then bing, bang, 1-2. They came out with 1-2 in the BCS, and we all hated it. And we said, maybe what we need to do now is keep the college football playoff format at 4, but let's, instead of letting these 13 biased people go into a room and do all of the above, maybe we need to bring the computers back and let them spit out not just bing, bing, 1-2, but bing, bang, boom, boom, 1-2-3-4. I don't know why I'm trying to talk like the robot from Lost in Space. Not intentional. But 1-2-3-4, here are the top four. Take the biases out, and let's just look at this. Well, guess what? As Golic and Wingo pointed out this morning, in order to find out what the difference is between biased humans using largely the eye test, as much as any rankers in terms of offensive and defensive ranking, strength of schedule, etc., etc., if you take the biased humans, they came out with Clemson 1, Oklahoma 2, Georgia 3, and Alabama 4. They ran every single metric from this 2017 season through all of the old BCS computer algorithms and replaced only one thing, the Harris poll, which doesn't exist now, with the AP poll, which is the only other human poll not involving the coaches, okay, the media, just like they did with the Harris poll. So they ran everything through the same exact computer metrics that the BCS was decided by, and guess what the BCS computers all spit back out? The same thing that the humans did in this year's 13-member college football playoff committee. The computers said Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Alabama. So by virtually every measure, electronic or human, algorithm or emotion, by all of them, the committee got it right. Now, we know where this stands here in what we like to call Big Ten country, because this is, you know, it's kind of a combination of MAC country and Big Ten country, of course, with our loyalty to the UT Rockets and Bowling Green Falcons and everything MAC. But, of course, we are in the middle, literally equidistant between Ann Arbor and Columbus. It's Big Ten country as well with, you know, Purdue and Indiana not too far away, et cetera. We know that the argument made by Jim Delaney you just heard there was going to be, you know, we are bitterly disappointed. I thought he was classy, by the way he handled it. But we are bitterly disappointed that our champion is not going to get a chance to play in this. Conference championships, one would expect, should be an extraordinarily important component in deciding who gets to play for the national championship. And I have to say that the more I consider what happened last year when the Ohio State Buckeyes were the beneficiary of the, hey, you don't have to be a conference championship to go to the playoff, because they went to the playoff instead of conference champion Penn State, who beat Ohio State, if you recall. When I consider that, and I consider one other factor, it has come to my attention, quite frankly, that the college football conference championship doesn't mean squat crap when it comes to choosing the four playoff teams that make the CFP. Well, what do you mean, Bob? Didn't you just hear Kirby Hokut tell you that 14 of the 16 teams that have been in the conference championships, or I'm sorry, that have been in the national college football playoff thus far have been conference champions? That's 87.5% of the teams that get in are conference champions, and that is true. Yes, it is. But here's the reason I say that the conference championship should not be a prerequisite to getting in, and has not been a prerequisite to getting in since this whole thing was started 4 years ago. And it's a very simple mathematical equation. It doesn't take Jeff Sagarin's computer algorithm to figure this out. Your second grader can do this. Are you ready? There are five Power 5 conferences. You see how that worked? It's in the name. Power Five. There are five Power Five conferences. Each one of them crowns a champion every year. There are only four playoff spots. That means at least one conference champion gets screwed out of the playoffs every single year. So I don't think it's necessarily genuine or real for anybody, particularly here in Big Ten country, to be bitching and moaning about, well, Ohio State won their conference championship and they didn't make it. Alabama didn't win theirs and they made it. That's not fair. Well, tell that to the Big 12 conference championship each of the last couple of years. And people say, oh, that's their fault. They didn't expand big enough to get two divisions in order to be able to have a conference championship game like we have. They just had a regular season champion. Well, that disqualifies them. Really? Then why are they included in what is known as the Power Five? You cannot exclude them simply because they chose not to have a conference championship game. And people say, well, yes, we can. Because last year on Championship Saturday, Penn State had to fight for its conference championship. SEC teams had to fight. ACC teams. Pac-12 teams had to fight. And the Big 12 conference champion, just by virtue of the best record in the regular season, gets to sit by and put their feet up. And guess what? That team did not get rewarded with a spot in the playoffs because of that. And people were fine with that. Alabama did not have to play in one this time, and they got in. Don't tell me conference championships are a prerequisite when you tell a conference champion, like the Big 12 champion every year, you don't count because you didn't play a game, you got to put your feet up. And this year you say, okay, you do get to go in even though you put your feet up. Don't tell me the conference championships matter when every year, and I don't care if it's the Pac-12 champion, which I'll talk about in a moment. I don't care if it's Pac-12 champion, Big 12 champion, or Big 10 champion. At some point, if you named all conference champions into the Final Four, at least one gets shut out because there are five conferences, four spots. So that means the conference championship is not an automatic trigger to the Final Four. Penn State found that out last year. Ohio State is finding out this year. The Big 12 champion has found it out the last 3 years. The Pac-12 champion is finding it out again as well. So don't tell me that Ohio State should have gotten in instead of Alabama because of conference championships. That's hogwash. What isn't hogwash is the fact that there are four teams in the Final Four and all of them have one loss. There is no two-loss team that cracked the code, like Ohio State or USC. There's certainly no three-loss team that cracked the code like Auburn. These are four extraordinarily high-ranking teams who have been extraordinarily highly ranked all season long, each of whom has one loss that is considered to be far less egregious than the two suffered by Ohio State or the two suffered by Pac-12 champion USC. That's just the fact of the matter. Now let's talk about whether or not they're right. Actually, I'll tell you what, before I talk about whether or not they're right, about the one losses of these teams that are in being obviously less egregious than the two losses of those who have been shut out, I want to do something that they did. This is where I went back to Wingo, or Golic and Wingo this morning. And I really found this fascinating. So if you weren't up and you couldn't hear it, first of all, you should get up and listen to it. They're doing a great job. Replacing Mike and Mike, the long-running, 20 years or whatever they were on the radio. We're so glad to have Golic and Wingo right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, right? But if you weren't up in early and you didn't hear this, I think you'll appreciate this. I know I certainly appreciated it. It was really well done. I'm going to give you three teams, and we're going to use blank resumes. I'm not going to tell you who the three teams are, and I want you to tell me at the end of the three which one you think best deserves a spot in the Final Four. You ready? The first team... And again, I'm not stealing this. I mean, I am, but I'm giving credit to it, attribution to it. This is what Wingo and his staff put together this morning on Golic and Wingo. So this isn't my work or my compilation, but it came from ESPN this morning. Team number one finished 11-2. Were they their conference champion? Yes. They had a strength of schedule of 36 best schedule in the country, toughest schedule. And when it comes to wins over FPI top 50 teams, they had five of them. Okay. Team number two, unnamed, finished 11-1, so one fewer losses. Did they win their conference championship? No, they did not. Their strength of schedule is 47, so 11 spots worse than the other team that I just mentioned, Team A. Very negligible in the big picture of 128 teams. 36 and 47 are both right in the same realm. And the number of wins they have over FPI top 50 teams is 4. Now, team number 3, or C, if we were using that, finished 11-2. Did they win their conference championship? Yes. Their strength of schedule was 11th. Let me say that again. 11th compared to 47th and 36th. And how many wins do they have over FPI top 50 teams? 6. More wins over top 50 teams, much harder schedule. Conference champion. Which of those three, A, B, or C, Jim Cushlin, has the strongest case to make the CFP?
For me, looking at it blind, I'm going to go number 3, and if I may, my guess is number 3 is USC.
You're exactly right, and that was the point Wingo was making this morning. The first team is Ohio State, 11-2, conference champion, strength of schedule 36, 5 wins over top 50 teams. Bama was the second team, 11-1, no conference championship, strength of schedule 47, wins over FPI teams 4, top 50 teams 4. USC 11-2, identical to Ohio State. Conference champion, yes, identical to Ohio State. Strength of schedule, 11. Compared to Ohio State's 36 and Bama's 47. Wins over FPI top 50 teams, 6 compared to 5-4. And yet they weren't even in the conversation.
Yeah, they were all down at number 8.
8. And if you heard Kirby Hoka talking about it in that montage at the top of the show, they weren't even a part of the discussion. He said, we're considering Alabama or Ohio State, and that's it. How do you do that if we're talking about conference championships are supposed to matter, how do you do that to a Power 5 conference champion with a far better resume than the Big Ten champion or the East runner-up, or excuse me, the SEC, what is Alabama, East or West?
West.
SEC West. Runner-up to Auburn. What do you... USC had a far better case than they did, too, and yet they weren't even part of the conversation. How can that be? You know, everybody's screaming about a conference championship. You know, Buckeye Nation is screaming conference championship. How about the Pac-12 conference champion? They have 2 losses, just like Ohio State. They're 2 losses. They have 1 not a bad loss and 1 blowout loss. Ohio State had 1 pretty bad loss and 1 blowout loss. The difference being that both of the losses USC suffered were to ranked teams, 16th ranked Washington State,
right,
in a very close loss, and then a 35-point blowout loss at highly ranked at the time Notre Dame on the road both times. Ohio State got blown out by Oklahoma, and you say, well, 15 points isn't a blowout. Really?
That's more than 2 touchdowns.
That's exactly
if
right. If Vegas were to
plus,
ever establish
that's getting in that territory.
If Vegas were ever to establish Oklahoma as a 14 or 15 point favorite on the road in the horseshoe, what would people say? Are you kidding me? The fix would have to be in. There's no way that can happen. And not to mention, that wasn't a game that was like a 3-point game in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And Oklahoma scored twice late to put it away. Oklahoma dominated the Buckeyes from start to finish. Period. Just did. That was at home for the Buckeyes and early in the season. Then you add to that, of course, the embarrassment of giving up 55 points to unranked Iowa on the road late in the season on the way to a 31-point loss. The 31-point loss at Iowa, in my mind, in my opinion, is far worse than a 35-point loss for USC at Notre Dame, which was ranked in the top 5 or 6 at the time. And then the other one, like I said, on the road at Washington State, 16th ranked, they lost versus a home game, of course, losing by more than 2 touchdowns to Oklahoma. So to me, how is USC is just completely invisible to this committee as they were? I'll let you hear from Kirby Hoka again, but I do need to take our bottom of the hour sports center, and we'll do that after we go wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
By the way, and I do see you on hold. I'm coming right to your phone calls after the bottom of the hour, local sports center as well. Wild Stat of the Day, 51 of the players who played on this year's only undefeated team in college football, 12-0 Central Florida, taking on Auburn in the New Year's Day, New Year's 6 Peach Bowl. Were also players who were on a winless team. The 2015 version of the UCF Golden Knights went 0-12. What an amazing turnaround for those 51 players. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We'll get to your phone calls on all of this, and I'll let you hear Kirby Hokut, the chairman of the committee that made all this thing happen, coming up next right here.
By calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, 3:45, right here on the ticket. We'll go right to your phone calls in a minute. First, just a couple of quick notes. And, Kush, I had to step away from the speaker just a moment. I did not catch. Did you get LiAngelo Ball being pulled out of UCLA?
No, I did not LeVar catch Ball, that.
Oh, man.
LeVar Ball has pulled his son out of UCLA because of the suspension, the indefinite suspension, because his son decided to be a criminal shoplifter in China and had to get bailed out by President Trump. So LeVar has pulled his kid out of UCLA. His youngest son, if you recall, was pulled out of Chino Hills High School.
I do remember that a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, that was about a month ago or so because he didn't like the coaching at Chino Hills.
Oh,
and, of course, Lonzo is taking his lumps in the NBA all while this idiot continues to run his mouth. You talk about ruining the promising careers of three young kids. There it is. And also, did you have a Gronk suspension?
I glanced over maybe 10 minutes ago at the TV machine here at my end of the studio and saw that, yeah.
Okay, good. So Gronk is out for one game. I got to tell you what, he is very, very lucky it was just one. That was one of the cheapest shots I have seen a guy take in a long, long, long time. And the only reason I'm sure this is one game for Gronkowski's hit, if you didn't see it, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you really need to see the video. Maybe we can tweet it or something. But Rob Gronkowski, after a pick thrown in the fourth quarter by Tom Brady, quarterback Tre'Davious White of the Bills, got the pick and fell down immediately and landed on his face, you know, on his stomach, out of bounds. He's down, period. Plays over. Another Patriot actually touches him down just for good measure. Just, you know, reaches down and touches him with the hand. Gronkowski, who the pass was intended for, gets up. He fell on the play and drives a forearm into the back of the head of the helmet of Tre'Davious White while he's laying on the ground, essentially driving his face into the turf through his helmet. And concussed Tre'Davious White. He gave him a concussion on that blatant, cheap, late hit. It was brutal. The only reason I can think of why Gronkowski got one game, this is his first ever suspension. He has been fined for saying things a few different times, but not for any cheap shots or late hits or any of those kinds of things. And he does not have a reputation for being a dirty player. If this was Vontaze Burfict, who's going to play tonight against the Steelers, if this was Ndamukong Suh, the former Lion, if this was, you know, any number of a bunch of guys with a reputation, that kind of hit would probably cost you a year, maybe six games or half a season, you know, eight games or something like that. But because it was his first offense, I believe, that's why he only got one game. He's lucky it wasn't two or three, and then maybe negotiated down through the appeals process to one or two. But wow, that was a brutal play yesterday between the Patriots and the Bills. Just wanted to throw that in there before we get back to the college football playoff story. All right, real quick, I want you to hear the Kirby Hokut cut again as he explained why Alabama is the number four team in the playoff ahead of Ohio State and why USC was never even on their radar.
We don't look at conference affiliation. Again, we look at the four very best teams. The conference championships are important. If you look at the history of the CFP playoffs, 14 of the 16 teams have been conference champions. But however, we have the flexibility and the discretion to put non-champions in the top four if they are one of the four very best. The selection committee looked at a one-loss Alabama team, that one loss coming against the final ranking number seven team, Auburn, in a very competitive game. We compared that to a two-loss Ohio State team, obviously the one loss at home to number two-ranked Oklahoma, but more damaging was the 31-point loss to unranked Iowa. We spent a great amount of time talking about the full body of work. Now that the complete season is in front of us, we have the full body of work. The selection committee just just favored Alabama's full body of work over that of Ohio State. And it was consistent over the course of the year as we saw Alabama play week in and week out.
And it is true about the consistency. Alabama spent the entire season from September until that loss in the Iron Bowl as the number one team in both of the coaching poll, or both of the human polls, the coaches poll and the AP poll. And they were either one or two in each of the iterations of the playoff poll or playoff rankings when they came out with their, toward the end of the season. So they were very highly regarded by everybody. And the entire body of work is the issue here. The entire body of work is the issue. You can say Alabama didn't beat anybody anywhere near as good as Ohio State did by beating Penn State, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. Three huge wins over top 12 teams. Fair enough. But that's only half of the body of work equation. The other half of the equation is, how about losses? While Alabama doesn't have anywhere nearly as big of wins as Ohio State has, Ohio State has two extraordinarily egregious losses that Alabama has nothing even close to. And that, of course, would be Oklahoma and Iowa versus just the Iron Bowl loss by the Crimson Tide at the end of the season to number six Auburn. So that's the body of work they're talking about. Kirby Hokut explained it. He said just Ohio State and just Alabama considered for that last spot, not USC. If I'm the Pac-12 commissioner, Kush, you only played Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner, in your montage. I don't know what the Pac-12 commissioner's got to say about the fact that his teams can't even get a sniff of this thing. And USC is a damn fine football team.
Yeah.
First time, by the way, they've beaten Stanford twice in the same year in, like, I don't know, 90 years or something stupid like that. Crazy, tremendous, hard-fought games against Stanford, by the way, which is another very good team. And I'll tell you what, if I was Clemson and I had a choice of playing in the first round and then in the semifinals, Ohio State or Alabama or USC, the last one I want to face is USC. Based on what I saw from Bama against Auburn, and based on what I've seen by Ohio State and their propensity to crumble, especially after 31-0 against Clemson last year, I would not want to face USC. I think they're playing better than any one of the three at the end of the season. And if you do look at total body of work, well, we ran through it. 11-2, the 11th toughest schedule in the country for the Trojans versus the 36th toughest for the Buckeyes, 47th toughest for the Crimson Tide. And their two losses, a three-pointer on the road at 16th-ranked Washington State and a blowout loss at number, I don't know, they were like 7 or something like that, Notre Dame.
Actually, I checked, they were a 13th at the time. But
oh,
still,
oh, okay, that win popped them up to number 7. That's
yes.
What it was. Okay,
yes.
That's what it was. So they lost to 16 and 13. And Ohio State, of course, lost to 5 Oklahoma by 2 touchdowns plus, and then 31 to unranked Iowa. I would take the USC body of work as well. If you're going to complain, in my mind, that Alabama shouldn't be in over a Power 5 conference champion, I'll take your argument, but that Power 5 conference champion you should be talking about is USC. Rossford is where we're going to go first. Line 3, Bernie, you're on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, thanks for your patience. Bernie, go ahead, sir.
Hey, that's okay. Hey, I want to tell you, at least I'm a Buckeye fan. Kind of okay. Disappointed that they didn't make it.
Most of us are. We're
they might have got this. Yeah. They might have got this right with the four teams, but without resume and league championship didn't have that much weight this time. To me, it goes to it would go to why would these schools anymore want to have like an Oklahoma on their schedule like the Buckeyes do. Why not do the recipe like Alabama does? Go over their last 9 years. They have always had a non-1A school on their schedule just before the Auburn game. So they're padding their schedules. They don't play.
Well, you're right about that, but here's the thing you can say in response to that. I mean, Ohio State has traditionally done the same thing, not before the Michigan game because they're not allowed to the way the Big Ten schedule works. But as far as when they choose their non-conference schedule, this year they chose UNLV. In other years, they've chosen Toledo, or they've chosen Akron, or they've chosen some other, you know, MAC school to do this. Most of them do this. You know who I would actually look to in this again? Well, is USC. They're the ones who have got to be regretting scheduling a heavyweight like Notre Dame. If they would have scheduled a Mercer the way Alabama did, then it's USC that is, you know, that is 12-1 right now and that is on their way to the playoff. But they challenge themselves with a, you know, with a Notre Dame in the same way that Ohio State challenged themselves with a, with an Oklahoma. And you have to also remember this. Alabama challenged themselves with a non-conference powerhouse to start the season in Florida State, never knowing that Florida State would just go on to suck this year. But almost these teams challenge themselves with a powerhouse from another Power 5 conference, and then they also pick up a patsy to get an easy win.
But you look at Alabama's schedule, they never go away from home. It's usually in a place that where, you know, it's not a home and home with these big schools. They don't do it like that. But then you're going to say a UNLV or a Toledo is a worse pick than Chattanooga twice and a Marist and a Georgia Southern and a Georgia State.
I didn't say it was a worse pick. I said it was a patsy.
Well, that's what I mean.
They play an easy team to get an easy win. When they schedule their three non-conference games, most of these powerful teams are going to challenge themselves once to look good on the resume. They're going to put a patsy in the other one and then maybe, you know, something in between in the other one. And that's pretty much what they have all done. The thing that makes Alabama's look worse, Bernie, to me, is like you said, it's right before the Auburn game. So it's almost like having a bye week to prepare for Auburn. I don't know how they were able to do that, because you would think that the the SEC schedule makers would have, you know, all of those conference games scheduled week after week after week late in the season, so nobody has.
They always do have a bye week before the LSU game too. But this isn't just Alabama do it; it's a lot of the SEC chooses these kinds of games against these weak opponents.
I won't say they don't, but again, I'm going to point out that they, not just SEC teams, all of them. Clemson played Kent State, who is one of the worst teams in college football. They literally are probably down in the 120s out of 120. And Bernie, thanks for the call. I'm going to get some other people on the radio. Kent State is down in the 120s, I think, out of the 128 teams in terms of overall FPI rankings, Football Power Index rankings. Okay, that's Clemson from the ACC. They got Kent State. I say, you know, Ohio State has routinely played a MAC team, or this time UNLV. I mean, if you look at it, same thing with Michigan. We'll play MAC, or they'll play, before they started losing to them back under Rich Rod and Brady Hoke. They lost to Appalachian State, and they lost to, who was it, Jim? The other ones. Toledo beat them up there.
When Toledo was
big house.
One of the years when Toledo in recent times has not been good. They were like 3-9 that year or something.
Right. UConn, another one. Anyway, you know, Pac-12 teams do it too. Most of them schedule at least one or two patsies per season in order to give themselves a break. It's not quite a bye, but it's not exactly a challenge either. And I'm trying to look and see who USC's patsy was this year, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they had one. They played, yes, they did. They played Western Michigan. They played Western Michigan out of the gate. So, again, not to, you know, sit here and keep saying these things about MAC schools, but they played Western at the very top. But then, of course, they played Texas, which you expect to be a challenge, and it was. It was a close-fought game, by the way, 27-24. And they played non-conference Notre Dame, which, of course, came back to bite them, as we talked about. So, yeah, Alabama does it, Ohio State does it, Michigan does it, everybody does it at least to some extent. Let me go to Dan in Perrysburg next. Dan, thanks for your patience. I know you've been there a while. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Good. Hey, just wanted to weigh in on this as well. I guess my issue, I am an Ohio State fan. Actually, I went to the Ohio State-Michigan game this year. I have zero problem with Ohio State not being in the playoffs. Zero. I think that when you lose by 31, like everybody knows, that I think that disqualifies you. What I do have an issue with is some of the roundabout logic about how they're leaving them out. What you say makes sense with regards to they lost by 31 at Iowa, end of story, and they have two losses. I think that ends it right there. But for Holcutt and the committee to come out the week before this week and say that teams 5-8 are very close, okay? So by their own admission, teams 5-8 are very close. Then, from then on, so that's where they're saying they're at, right? So the only things that happened between now and then were that Alabama didn't play and Ohio State beat the committee's number 14. So if you're going to set yourself up with that logic, your conclusion at the end does not follow the logic you were spewing to us previously. And I do have to mention one other thing.
Well,
you know, we cherry pick.
Before you do that, let me respond to the first
one.
Hold on. I'm not going to hang up on you, Dan. I just want to respond to that first before we get to the second one. That's why I believe this committee is such a farce that they even have all of those rankings in weeks, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, or until we get to here, you know, the five previous ones. Because they told us in previous iterations of this that every week is a clean slate, that there is no, we're going to look at last week and see how close they were to one another or where they were ranked then, but they start from scratch every single week. So you got them telling us that on one hand, and then Hoka, like you just said, saying, well, they were really close, and therefore, since things changed the next week, you would think one would rise above the others. They need to just stop having those early rankings, and they need to stop talking about it and just have the rankings at the end of the season. Because you notice what you don't see in when you look at college football, or excuse me, basketball, which is kind of the model, I guess, in a weird way, when they get down to the 64, the college selection committee isn't giving you, here's the 64 teams now when there's still a month left to play, and next week we'll update you on, this would be the 64-team field now. This would be the 1 through 16 seeds in each of the regions now. They don't give you that crap. They just say, at the end of the season, we've looked at all of the bodies of work, and bang, here are the 64 teams. And that's what I think college football needs to do.
Oh, I agree.
What was your second? And then
appreciate it. The only other thing I wanted to mention too was, you know, you're wondering why not USC, Bob. And I know, as I mentioned before, we cherry pick stats. So you're picking the strength of schedule stat, right?
Yes.
The strength of schedule stat is it's relevant. It's relevant, but keep in mind it's a summation of all your games. So if you play a bunch of middling teams, or you're versus, like, let's say Alabama. What brings Alabama down is playing an FBS school, right? Same thing with Ohio State. They have some cupcakes in there.
Sure.
But what they do have that USC does not have is quality wins. And I don't mean one. I mean multiple. The only ranked team USC beat was Stanford twice.
Right.
That's it.
That's
so
very
you,
true.
You cannot discount the importance. So that, I'm trying to figure out.
If you take the quality wins over ranked teams, Dan, and thank you for the call. I got to run here. If you take the wins over quality ranked teams, and you combine them with losses and what kind of quote-unquote quality losses they were, that's what gives you the quote-unquote, and I hate using air quotes, but I'm doing it all over the place here, that's what gives you the overall body of work. Who are the great teams you've beaten, and what are your losses? And to me, the big difference here between Ohio State and Alabama, and in USC and Alabama, and even USC and Ohio State, is the quality of the losses. That tips the scales in the quote-unquote overall body of work in the favor of a USC, and actually in the favor of Alabama over Ohio State. Quality wins versus the damaging, or how deeply damaging the losses were. And yes, USC's 35-point loss to Notre Dame is bad. But that's on the road at South Bend against number 13. Way worse than a 31-point loss on the road at unranked Iowa. And I think that's the difference. By the way, in addition to their wins over Stanford, you pointed out, they also have a win over 22 Arizona. And those are easily their biggest wins. But you should also, again, and we talk about this challenging yourself, they also scheduled non-conference Texas. Now, Texas didn't turn out to be anything this year under a new coach they're building, but that's a win. It was a close win, but that's a win over a Texas team that should not be discounted either. And that's where I've got to leave this for now because we're late. Top of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, will break down his thoughts on this as we continue right here on the Ticket.
We don't look at conference affiliation. Again, we look at the four very best teams. The conference championships are important. If you look at the history of the CFP playoffs, 14 of the 16 teams have been conference champions. But however, we have the flexibility and the discretion to put non-champions in the top four if they are one of the four very best. The selection committee looked at a one-loss Alabama team, that one loss coming against the final ranking number 7 team, Auburn, in a very competitive game. We compared that to a two-loss Ohio State team, obviously the one loss at home to number 2 ranked Oklahoma, but more damaging was the 31-point loss to unranked Iowa. We spent a great amount of time talking about the full body of work. Now that the complete season is in front of us, we have the full body of work. The selection committee just favored Alabama's full body of work over that of Ohio State, and it was consistent over the course of the year as we saw Alabama play week in and week out.
The committee decided decided that Alabama was unequivocally one of the best four teams. And that was based on Alabama's, obviously, the one loss being on the road at number seven. Ohio State had the two losses, of course, Oklahoma, and then the other, which is a little more damaging by 31 at Iowa. Alabama is just, the committee viewed it as just a superior team. Conference championships, first of all, are a great thing for the student athletes, of course. They'll forever be the Big Ten champion. But the fact is that that is one of the tiebreakers that the committee uses if the teams are viewed as comparable. And in this case, the committee viewed Alabama as a step above. There were not any other teams considered for four and five other than Alabama and Ohio State.
They overwhelm all of us, especially those of us who cover college football, with all these half points and 13th data points. And it gets to the point where we overthink it. I think if the three of us sat down, we'd watch games, and you would look at who are the better teams. I mean, forget all this other nonsense. Having gone through this mock process, I mean, it was one of the longest afternoons of my life. I mean, I couldn't wait to get out of there because it's just too much for me.
I was, you know, surprised and disappointed. It felt like, you know, the right thing to do here is to, you know, sort of understand the things that are good. We had a great season. The Buckeyes had a great year. Badgers had a great year, but was disappointed to say I wasn't, wouldn't be honest. At the same time, the committee's got a tough job. I'm not going to relitigate it. I've made my views clear going into the championship game. I thought that our champion would have done enough, and certainly with the other outcomes around the country, I thought we had a very good chance to have our champion in. And we're not the first conference to be outside looking in. And I think they showed great respect for the Alabama program.
I certainly believed and trusted in the integrity of the committee that they would do their very best to put the best teams in. A lot of good teams, and I like to congratulate the other teams that got in and some of the other teams that got strong consideration. But I really do believe that based on a total body of work, that our team really deserved the opportunity to be in, and we're very pleased and happy that they did.
Once again, I admire people to do their job. Nothing short of effort. There's a bunch of intelligent people. That's a tough one. I remember I was back the first BCS one when Florida got in, played actually Ohio State, and that was one, I think, the first BCS game separated. The evolution of this thing is out of control. You know, do you go eight games? Do you go, or eight teams? You know, I don't know. I think more than ever, though, this is a March Madness. This is for you wake up in the morning now and that season starts. You're on the clock. And how should they do it was a question. I don't know. I think they probably did the best they could.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, there it is, laid all out for you. We're kind of on a one-topic show today, because it really is all about the college football playoff, the selection committee yesterday, shocking and angering fans in Columbus, paying no attention whatsoever to the people out in Southern California, by the way. USC was never even a consideration, despite a lot of the numbers that we have given you today. Alabama on its way in, cries of SEC bias certainly are filling the air and filling my ears, and maybe there is something legitimately to it. I will say this, though. No two coaches, I think, are more darlings of the college football playoff committee, the bowl committees from years gone by, the BCS committee, than Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. Both of those guys are just gold for the decision makers. The fact that one got in this time around and the other did not, well, we'll find out what Paul Keels has to say about that. Paul Keels is the voice of the Buckeyes, joining us with a little reaction to the Big Ten championship win for the Buckeyes and, of course, yesterday's disappointing announcement. Paul, good to talk to you. It's weird. It doesn't feel like a Thursday to me.
Well, and we kind of flipped it over into basketball mode too, Bob. But yeah, it's been an interesting 24 hours, 48 hours really, I guess.
Yeah, no question about it. By the way, we will hit basketball before we're done with this conversation because it is Ohio State and Michigan. Not the same thing as football, but it's Ohio State and Michigan, so it means something. Paul, before we talk about the results yesterday of the committee's decision-making, let's talk about the results of the game. It started out looking like Ohio State was going to do what it needed to do, and that is blow Wisconsin out to really shock the committee into saying, all right, that's a team we can bump from 8 in the rankings last week into the top 4. They just routed an undefeated football team, you know, kind of like they did a couple of years ago with the 59-point win. It didn't end that way. It ended with the Buckeyes looking a little bit gassed in the fourth quarter and Wisconsin making a comeback. And you know, a couple of field goals turned out to be the difference here. So what was your reaction to the way that game started versus the way that it ended, Paul?
Bob, I wasn't so sure that short of 59-0 or more that an Ohio State win was going to guarantee anything. Certainly with the way the game played out, and, you know, it was a very entertaining game, not all of it for good reasons given the turnovers, but I think it was one of those things that when the game was done, you still weren't convinced that the conference championship was going to help Ohio State and that it was going to offset the Iowa loss. And that's kind of how it seemed to play out. You could look at a lot of reasons why maybe they would think about Ohio State. You could look at a lot of reasons why you should be concerned about Ohio State getting in. You know, and I think the other thing that's an interesting part of this formula, maybe Ohio State was bit by the fact that they opened the door last year getting in as a non-conference champion, and that paved the way for Alabama to get in.
Yeah, that's the real irony of the thing, isn't it? I mean, it was the Buckeyes who were the beneficiaries of the precedent, if you will, that was established last year. You don't have to win your conference title. And now, of course, they are the victims of the very same thing. Let's talk a little bit more about the game, though, and how it went, because I think you might be right. Short of something like 59-0, maybe it wasn't going to happen. But a bigger win, a more impressive win, certainly may have helped their case. If there was that razor-thin margin, you know, that the chairman talked about, you know, last week when the Buckeyes were eighth, he said the margin between 5 and 8 is razor thin. So everybody is alive in this thing, and it's very close. So to me, a more impressive win over Wisconsin certainly didn't guarantee anything, but maybe it's enough to get past that razor thin margin, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. But I guess that's also predicated, Bob, if we really were to believe that margin was that thin.
Uh-huh.
But I also think, too, that, you know, you have to consider looking at Wisconsin going into the game, how well they had played, both offensively and defensively. And certainly they deserve the credit, especially on the defensive end, for making it more difficult for Ohio State in that second half and holding them to just 2 field goals. I think that's kind of maybe getting lost a little bit in all of this, is what Wisconsin was able to do on the defensive side. And while we were able to sing the praises of Ohio State in the first half, scoring those big plays against the number one total defense in the country, I think we saw Wisconsin kind of go back to that form a little bit and adjusting things. But where it really seemed to swing Ohio State's way is what they were able to do defensively to keep Jonathan Taylor from really getting into a role. I think you really saw how Wisconsin probably was deficient in minus having their top 2 receivers that had been out for the year with the injury, and a couple of other receivers who certainly had the ability to make big plays, but not like Quintez Cephas and Jazz Peavy had been able to do earlier in the year. And, you know, everybody who followed Wisconsin kind of knew that they were going to go as efficient as their quarterback, Alex Hornibrook, would be. And those couple of interceptions he threw proved to be very costly.
Paul Keel's joining us, the voice of the Buckeyes. Going to be calling basketball action tonight for Ohio State against Michigan. But we're kind of reacting to not just the game, obviously, on Championship Saturday, but yesterday's announcement. So listening to Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, listening to Urban Meyer, they seem almost resigned to the fact, what you called last week, that angry girlfriend you just cannot get away from, that Iowa loss, which is a great metaphor, and I use it, by the way, in other conversations outside of ours, so I give you credit for it, attribution to you.
Thank you.
But they seem almost resigned to the fact that, yeah, you know, we kind of knew. There really is just no getting away from that. We laid the biggest egg of the season, maybe that anybody that's a contender laid all season, at Iowa, and it's just something we can't escape from. And while certainly they would like to have played in this thing, they can't really complain too much that they're not.
I think because of that, and also what we started talking about, that it, you know, the same thing worked to their benefit last year. You know, the unfortunate part is that it does seem, at least in the Big Ten's case, and in others in past years, to value a conference championship. You know, which begs the question, you know, if it's going to be a subjective decision like that, is it really worth playing those conference championship games? Yes, it is, but not for the reasons it necessarily is going to help a team get into the playoffs under the current format. So, you know, I think they understand, you know, both Urban Meyer and the Big Ten Conference, but mostly Urban Meyer and the coaching staff, that, you know, they have to look in the mirror and see what happened against Iowa. And I think, Bob, that's why we've heard so many of these coaches talk about, this is like an NCAA tournament every week. The playoffs start when the season starts. And, you know, one loss doesn't necessarily kill you. I think we've seen now that 2 losses by itself doesn't necessarily kill you, but it depends on where they occur, who they are to, and in this case, at least anyway, what kind of a margin. Because let's say Ohio State lost to Iowa in a competitive game, a 1-score game. Would that have been enough to sway the difference? We'll never really know.
That's a great point. Although they did mention Holcutt mentioned that the Alabama's loss was a close loss to Auburn on the road in a rivalry game and that sort of thing. And a close loss does matter to some extent, I think. I think, you know, losing at Iowa, I mean, it is bad when you lose by two scores at Oklahoma in a game in which, quite frankly, did you feel as you called that game, if you can remember back to September, not Paul, did you ever get a feeling like the Buckeyes were in control of that game? Because I feel like they were controlled by Oklahoma from start to finish at home in what ended up being just over a two score victory for the Sooners. I think the margin of victory in both those games really did kind of matter.
Yeah, not in control, but felt like, you know, going into the fourth quarter, it was still a competitive game. But you know, I think Oklahoma's stock as the season has gone on is kind of, if you will, make that loss a little more palatable. But the Iowa game, you know, right from the first play from scrimmage, that didn't seem to be a competitive game at all, just because of the momentum with that pick six and things like that. And, you know, and again, Oklahoma is, you know, where they stand right now with all of the regard they get. So I think a loss swallows a little better than it does against Iowa.
The money people seem to be trustworthy from time to time, talking about Vegas. Are you surprised that right now Bama's a 2-1 favorite to win the whole doggone thing? They're the last team in, the most controversial pick to go in, not having won their conference championship or even their division to get to the conference championship game. So, but Vegas loves them. They're 2-1. What do you make of that?
You know, somebody told me that today when I was at the shoot around for the basketball team, and I was a little surprised. But then when you think about it and think, Bob, about all the time we have between now and then, my only guess, and I'm not really that expert at handicapping, but does that allow for a lot of wiggle room and allow for some movement depending on how the money gets bet? So yeah, I was a little surprised, but you know, I think certainly, you know, we've seen what Alabama has been in the past decade, and there's no reason to think that they couldn't get in there. And this might be part of the committee's thinking. There's no reason to think Alabama can't get in there and beat any of the other three teams. So maybe that's kind of what Vegas is looking at.
As you look at the matchups just in the early going here, and I know, of course, we talk all the time about your job kind of prevents you from seeing every game that everybody plays, but knowing what you know of Clemson and Bama, knowing what you know of Oklahoma and Georgia, who do you like in those two title games or a semifinal game?
Well, you know, the question I have with Oklahoma and Georgia, does Oklahoma have enough defense to stop what Georgia can do offensively? So, you know, I think that's one of those that it really makes you think that you kind of like to swing Georgia's way a little bit, knowing certainly how they performed offensively. But can Oklahoma's defense get in their way enough? And then the other one, you know, that one is really kind of puzzling, only because I'm curious to see how Alabama responds after losing a game, after not playing in the conference championship game. You got to think that Nick Saban will certainly sell the bill of goods that they're fortunate to be there. They're ranked number four, you know, maybe try the little disrespect card and see if that motivates them. But, you know, but also, you know, I heard one of his comments earlier this morning. Think about the last two games they played in the national championship games. They've both been fantastic games. So that one could very easily be a coin flip, although you do like the more experienced quarterback, Jalen Hurts, over Kelly Bryant.
That's a good point. And I actually am picking, I just actually put it on Facebook, not that you care, but I was just kind of opining on this on Facebook during our break there that I am going to pick Bama, shockingly, to upset Clemson in that round. And I do think Oklahoma is going to take Georgia down simply because it's going to be a high-scoring affair, and I'm going to put my money on Baker Mayfield.
I follow you there.
I'm sorry?
No, I follow you there, especially with the Baker Mayfield thing, the way he's played. I can go along with you on that one.
Yeah, what he did to that TCU defense, which was one of statistically the best defenses in the country twice in the last 4 weeks, is really, really something special. And I think as Oklahoma's defense may have a hard time stopping Georgia, it is certainly going to be the case in reverse, too. So it'll be a very interesting outcome. So as we look forward, do you expect, Paul, and this is just totally your opinion, I was talking to my son about this the other day about bowl games. And, you know, when you're not in this playoff now, the bowl games, I think, are more magnified as being kind of just glorified exhibition games more than they ever had been previous, even under the BCS format. And as such, players have started in the last couple of years, thanks, of course, in large part to a Buckeye whose injury in a bowl game cost him millions of dollars in terms of draft status. Do you expect to see everybody play in this bowl game for Ohio State? And what do you make of the matchup with USC when they get to the Cotton Bowl?
You know, right now I do. I know that JT Barrett made the comment that he was planning on playing, but I don't think JT's in that category that you're talking about. You might be thinking about somebody like a Sam Hubbard, who Sam may or may not announce that he's going to leave early. Denzel Ward is somebody that people are possibly pondering on. Sam Hubbard might be the first guy to think about, but I don't think he's that kind of a guy. I think he, especially with that defensive line group, the way they've played and played together. So I would be a little surprised, but, you know, that has become a real possibility, and I think we all understand it.
Yeah,
the matchup, I think the matchup's a great one. USC has kind of gone under the radar after their loss to Washington State to playing maybe some of the most consistent football of anybody in the country all season long. And, again, it's one of those matchups you don't see very often. They had that home-and-home series a few years ago, but, hopefully that's a matchup that'll get people somewhat excited about going out there. But, and that's the other part. I'm curious about the attendance to see what that'll be like, too.
You know, since you brought it up, I asked you about it, but about how well USC has been playing here at the end of the year. I kind of said it's interesting that USC wasn't even a consideration as the committee announced their explanation. It was really for 4 and 5. It was only down to Alabama and Ohio State. I had some stats that I saw on ESPN this morning that really just kind of opened my eyes. Let me read them to you real fast. You probably already know them, but just to kind of get your thoughts on them, Paul. If anybody's got a complaint that Alabama, a non-conference Power 5 conference champion, is in instead of them, here's a little comparison. USC went 11-2 and won the Pac-12 title. Ohio State went 11-2 and won the Big Ten title. USC played the 11th toughest schedule in the nation in going 11-2. Ohio State played the 36th toughest schedule in the nation. USC's lost a close game on the road, 3 points at number 16 Washington State. Ohio State lost pretty big at home to number 5 Oklahoma by 15. And they both had a blowout on the road. But USC's was at number 13 Notre Dame, and Ohio State's, of course, was at an unranked Iowa. Does USC have as much of a claim, Paul, now that all has been said and done, to that fourth spot as Ohio State did?
I think you could say that they do. And, the other interesting part in that, Bob, and, we were speculating on this driving back from Indianapolis yesterday, was there a team that could be a bailout for the committee to avoid both Ohio State and Alabama? And, I guess USC would have been the best possible guess at that if that were the case. But the Pac-12 seemed to have lost some of its sizzle. Had Washington held up their end a little better, had Washington State done the same, then maybe their conference would have been perceived a little bit better. The blowout loss to Notre Dame could have been a good loss had Notre Dame held up their end of the deal. And, their blowout loss in Miami kind of helped muddy things a little bit for USC. So they could have, I think. I don't know how much validation you would give to it, but I follow you. Yeah, I think they could have had just as much reason to complain about it.
At the end of the day, does that question alone mean that we should work our way toward 8?
I don't think there's been any question that as fans and solving all arguments, that would be the case. It's just we're still, and I forget how long the whole deals go, but we're not there yet. If that does so, then I think that's great. To get to the point where, conference championships are included at large berths, the group of 5 gets an automatic entry in because, Central Florida certainly could make an argument for that as well. And we've seen other group of 5 winners of conferences that would be able to make the same type of argument as well. So maybe that helps, but, I think time's going to help that more than anything.
Paul, last thing, does JT Barrett have a future in the National Football League?
That's a million-dollar question that I wish I had an answer for.
In any position, by the way. In any position. We know Braxton's going to switch positions. Is there anything that he could do?
Yeah, I think, I don't know that JT has that kind of flexibility and versatility. But here's what I think will happen. JT is going to get all kind of serious consideration, not just because of what he's done on the football field, but because of the individual he is. If general managers and scouts, whoever they are, if they get a chance to speak with him, interview him, and be around him, he's going to win people over as much as the young man he is, as much as what he does on the field.
Now, Paul, the real last thing. 7-2 Michigan, 1-0 in Big Ten play. 6-3 Ohio State. They won their first conference game as well. How about a little preview of the matchup tonight on the basketball court? It's going to be hard to
not only this. Not only did they win their first conference game, Bob, they gave Wisconsin the worst loss they've ever had in the Kohl Center. Now, Wisconsin is not what they've been in recent years, but this Ohio State team shot the ball incredibly well. The margin for error is very slim for Ohio State. We're starting to see Caleb Wesson, the freshman center, come into his own. C.J. Jackson has become more of an offensive threat than he was a year ago. So, I think we're seeing a mix of old and young. Katabase Diop has been a double-double machine. He's a tough guy for people to guard. But what Michigan did to Indiana was even more impressive. You know, Michigan's got a team that presents a great deal of length. They've always been under John Beilein, a great outside shooting team. This is, even though it's in Columbus, this is a tough matchup for a young Ohio State team tonight, but they've got to be coming in with a great deal of confidence based on the way they played Saturday at Wisconsin.
We will look forward to the call, and we will be looking forward to talking Buckeye basket with you all throughout the season, Paul, as we certainly have through the football. We're not done football, by the way. We will talk before the Cotton Bowl as well, but we will certainly talk round ball with you too. Paul Keels, we certainly appreciate your time. Thank you so much, my friend. Have a great time tonight.
My pleasure. You too, Bob.
Thank you. Paul Keels joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, the voice of the Buckeyes. Yeah, Michigan beat Indiana by 14, which was a very impressive win, and the Buckeyes laid one on 83-58 Wisconsin, as Paul just mentioned.
Okay. You know, real quick, what do you make of the weird scheduling? You know, you had the Wisconsin, then Michigan, a couple of random December Big Ten games. I'm not sure if I like that yet.
I don't know if I do either, because then it's right back into non-conference games.
Until right after essentially New Year's, and then it's all conference games.
Yeah, Big Ten goes what after this one? UCLA, non-conference Texas, Detroit, AAMU, Jacksonville, University of Jacksonville. Then they get into the full Big Ten schedule after that. And Ohio State, if I can find it again real quick, if you have the Buckeye schedule, you can run that down. Oh, here it is. I got it. After Michigan, then it's Western. Let's see. Then App. Is that Appalachian State, I want to say, maybe? Then Citadel, then North Carolina, then Miami of Ohio before getting on January 4th into the Big Ten schedule the way everybody else does. So, yeah, it is kind of weird just to have a random Big Ten, a couple of Big Ten games here before the non-conference schedule continues. Here's what we got. A quick time out here for a bottom-of-the-hour local sports center with Kush. Then I want to get back to you on the phones. How do you feel about what the committee did? Did Ohio State get screwed? Did USC get screwed worse? And who do you like when it comes to that those semifinal matchups? As I said to Paul Keels, I'm leaning toward Bama upsetting number one Clemson, and I'm looking toward Oklahoma to take down Georgia, setting up a very, very intriguing finale. Bama and Oklahoma, Nick Saban against Baker Mayfield. How about that for a couple of villains if you're looking for something going into a final? So if you have thoughts on that, let's get you on the radio at 866-240-1065 right here on the Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, we are. And thanks again to Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, for joining us. You got a lot of basketball coming up. You just heard Jim Christian talking about it, Buckeyes and Wolverines. But I want to go back to the phones now to talk about football. And it was Ohio State and Alabama, according to the College Football Playoff Committee chairman, Kirby Hokut. He said it was that was it, just between 4 and 5, Ohio State or Alabama. Turned out to be Alabama. Their one loss to Auburn. A little bit more palatable to the two losses for the Buckeyes, to Oklahoma by 15 and to Iowa by 31. How do you feel about it? Jimmy in Toledo, you're next. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's shaking, my man?
Yeah, it pretty much worked out like I've been saying for like a week. In fact, I think you led the last hour out with the staggering ratings in the BCS thing, which I think was the exact example that I used the week before.
I like, knew it was a caller or a guest. I didn't know who it was who brought that up.
Thank you for the reminder, Jimmy. Yeah, I remember this now.
I asked if anybody was, if it was just me or anybody starting to launch into the BCS. It was
They ran the numbers, just for those who didn't hear the first hour of the show, Jimmy, you're right. They ran the numbers through the BCS computers exactly as they existed before, replacing only the human poll, the Harris poll, with the current AP poll, because that's the only human one they've got. And the computers came back with the same exact thing that this committee did, 1 through 4.
Yeah, because the thing is, it just started taking on the same mold as, like, listening to a broken record. It was all the same BS, really. It's the same arguments, the same dilemmas. It's just, instead of two, it's basically turned into four. And it's, you know, it's still a bunch of, human biases built in. And I think it just, you know, the numbers are worthwhile. We just still need to expand it to 8. And this was the perfect year. The 1 through 8 would probably have a legitimate chance to win, because there's really no super two this year, I think. Clemson and Georgia, and you know, these teams are good, but I just don't see a real dominant team. And they used my line of reasoning. I said Alabama had been number one pretty much the entire year, and if Vegas had their druthers, I think they would have, you know, been favored over anybody that they'd put in there, and that came to pass as well. So, you know, I'm satisfied even as a Buckeye fan.
I love the idea. The more we talk about it, you know, Kush, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but just to run it down, it would be Clemson and USC 1-8 in round one, Oklahoma and Auburn, which would be spectacular, by the way, Georgia and Wisconsin, and then Bama and Ohio State. How about that? Just, you know, predictably.
Hey, listen, it's beautiful. But it's still – the other thing I wanted – there was a call earlier about getting all upset about Bama. You know, Bama and a couple of the SEC powers, you know, quite frankly, Nick Saban didn't win five national championships because he plays Mercer or Savannah State every year. So, you know, I remember 2015, the Buckeyes struggling when they beat that powerhouse Hawaii. Okay, so everybody does it.
That's what
and
I tried
fact,
to say. Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the SEC teams open up with powerhouse teams non-conference. Like Alabama will play a powerhouse schedule or team to begin the year.
Well, they did this year. Florida State, a non-powerhouse.
Yeah, often it's a team right in their own conference. I mean, it's nothing for those teams to open up with a Clemson or somebody in their own team. Auburn, I remember a couple of years ago, was Auburn played Oregon or somebody. I mean,
sounds about right.
So we need to stop this. And also the transitive property when trying to compare quality losses and quality wins, we don't really find out the strength, comparative relative strength of schedule until we see the conferences play one another in the bowl games. Because you can sit here and talk about the relative strength of the conferences, but then the Big Ten will go and they'll get whacked across the board, you know, in the conferences, you know, in the bowl games. So this isn't, you can't always do football math. It doesn't always work that way. And the best way to do this ultimately would just end this whole nonsense with the Power Five conferences. Cause you know, another thing, like I said before, if you're going to have FBS and you're going to include all these mid-majors, then you're going to have to just find a way to just have the Power Five conferences if you're going to maintain this ridiculous notion that they're all FBS teams, but then not reward the Central Florida. So like UT, I mean, if they ever went undefeated, what's the best they're going to do? The Dollar General Bowl? I mean, give me a break. Those students.
No. If they go undefeated, they'd be in a New York Six Bowl the way UCF.
Well, that's what they say. But what? Come on. There's 108 FBS teams or whatever, but there's only. What? So ask USC. They weren't even considered for the
top. I think it's 120. See, here's the thing, though, Jimmy, yeah, and there's no getting around it. And thanks for the call, buddy. I got some other people. Here's the thing. There's no way to get around. UCF, there's 128, I believe. Kush, am I right? 128 FBS.
I want to say it's 120. We're right around the correct number.
I think it's 128. In UCF, Central Florida, the only undefeated team in big FBS this year at 12-0, they had the 87th toughest schedule. Mm-hmm. Out of 128. Now, I'm not going to knock them. They're in the conference they're in, and that's who they're playing. And that's the way that it is. You can't play the 87th toughest schedule, go undefeated, and say, give me a spot in the bowl or in the final four ahead of somebody who's playing in one of the Power Five conferences, playing a 36th best schedule, 11th best schedule, yada, 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 and that has lost one or two and say, well, we didn't lose, you did. There has to be an accounting for that.
Yeah.
There has to be. And that's no disrespect against a UCF or a South Florida or a Toledo.
Or even Western Michigan a year ago.
What's that?
Or even Western Michigan a year ago.
Right, exactly. Or Northern Illinois a couple of years, you know, they seemed like they were right on the cusp. So, you know, you have to recognize there is major college football and then there is major college football. And a lot of those teams are in major college football, but they're not Power Five college football. And as crappy as that sounds and as mean as that sounds, we have to be realistic here. You know, and by the way, if we do what you and I say, Jim, which is get to eight, UCF gets a spot. They're just not getting a spot in the four.
Yes. Yeah. I was about to say that, but finish.
You get that Power Five all automatic conference champions in, and now it's up to a committee to choose the three at-large teams to finish out the field of eight. And now, if that's an Alabama who's a conference, not a non-conference winner, fine. But it should include, and probably would include, you know, a 12-0 Boise State, who in previous years would have just gone to, you know, the Fiesta Bowl to play Oklahoma and beat them again.
Right.
But this time it would be a UCF. who's going into the pool as a 7 or an 8 seed, and let's see if you really are made of all of that. You're going to play 1 or 2 in the first round, and I think everybody would be happy.
Yeah, if you were to expand to 8, you're able to do this more. I even tweeted out earlier in the hour, you know, if this was 8, my 8 would have been 1 through 6 is exactly as we see it. Then I would have put, personally, USC over Auburn at number 7, just on the grounds of you're still a 3-loss team, and maybe in such a scenario the committee or the rankings would have thought of it differently. And
they
then
might have, because nobody was being asked to do.
Right.
Nobody in the country was being asked to do what Auburn was being asked to do.
Right.
Beat number 1 Georgia, then beat number 1 Alabama, who replaced number 1 Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and then go beat Georgia again.
Yeah.
All within a span of 4 weeks.
Right.
Nobody was being asked to do that, and they had 2/3 of that, two legs of that done. So they're a 3-loss team, yes, but they're a damn fine 3-loss.
Yeah,
team.
And that would have been a tough one. And then number 8 would have been Central Florida. And in my scenario for 8, this is one part where I slightly differ from yours, Bob.
Yeah.
No conference, whether you're Big Ten or the Sun Belt, no conference is guaranteed anything except one thing. If you're undefeated, I believe you have the right in an 8-team system. You can't do it in 4, but in an 8-team system, if you finish undefeated, I think you'd have the right to defend that on the field as a number 8 seed.
See, I would disagree with that, Jim, only because then you're guaranteeing those non-conference patsies.
Nope.
All I got to do is go undefeated in the conference, and I'm going to schedule 3 non-conference patsies, and I automatically get in.
I'm sorry, but I personally discount that. I've done research on this going back to 1978. Most undefeateds there's ever been in a single season happened twice. There was 5. The average is 1.9. Let's round it up to 2. You'll never have a scenario where there's like 9 undefeated. It's just, it's basically
impossible.
I'm not
saying
impossible.
You would, but I still don't like that idea. I do want the conference champions of the Power Fives to be guaranteed a spot in if we go to 8.
Oh, and 9 times out of 10, or even better, 95 times out of 100, it would accidentally work that way for the Power Five.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
And that's why for me, it's I don't give the best of the rest group of 5 like they have in the whole system now. I don't give them an auto to the 8, but if they go undefeated, to me, they're in. Only in an 8. You can't do it in 4.
Let me get Mel, who's calling us from Swanton, up next, see what he thinks about all of this. Mel, thanks for joining us on The Ticket. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Bob.
Of course.
Obviously, my question is going to be how Alabama got selected by the selection committee. And if my understanding is right, the selection committee was formed by the chairman of the 5 Power 5 conferences, and they were put in place and given instructions on what criteria they were going to use. And I think 3 of the top criteria was strength of schedule, marquee wins, conference championships. Okay, and there's other things that fall in. And I look at Alabama, strength of schedule of the top 8 teams, I believe they rank 8th out of 8 on the top 8 in strength of schedule. And then you go to marquee wins. Alabama's marquee win, I believe, was LSU, who's ranked 17th. And I believe Alabama would be ranked 8 out of 8 in the top 8 on marquee wins. And then we go to conference championship. Alabama didn't win their division. The team that beat them in their division lost in the conference championship game, so that gives Alabama probably a very weak, if not the weakest, conference championship rating of anybody in the top 8. And going through the season with Alabama's strength of schedule, people they beat, I think they were overrated at 1 and 2. I think their rating should have much more mirrored the way Wisconsin was rated going in.
I'll tell you what, here's the thing.
Wrong.
Let me respond to some of that, Mel, and thank you for the phone call. I'm going to get some other people on, too. It is not my understanding that the committee is given specific criteria that each individual must follow, okay? Meaning that each individual member of the committee can consider this thing in different ways, independent of other committee members. And part of that is the eye test. And as you heard Kirby Hokut say this at the end of the in that montage clip that we played, he said, in the end of the day, we just liked Alabama's total body of work better than Ohio State's. Body of work was not any one of the 3 criteria things you just mentioned. You talked about strength of schedule or quality wins or marquee wins, and that's in the eye of the beholder as well. It just is. You also can't punish a team for scheduling a powerhouse to really enhance their resume and then have that powerhouse go on to have a crappy year. Because Alabama can be ripped for scheduling Mercer, but you should damn well praise them for scheduling Florida State to start the season. And that's one hell of a way to start the season. That's a test of all tests. And then it turns out Florida State sucked and the coach just left. But Bama certainly didn't know that, and they shouldn't be punished for that. That should be considered a quality win because it was a quality win over a normally very quality program. A marquee win, if you will. What's the music for? We're not done. I got more callers. Oh, Cushling, you're killing me. So the music's playing. I apologize to the callers. Looks like I can't come to you. But to me, that's what this is all about. Every committee member has his own criteria, and the eye test at the end of the day, they said, look, Alabama was number one or two all season long. Number one or two at the top of each poll, and the number one or two at the top of the CFP rankings when they started. And the fact is they didn't go on the road at a crappy team in their conference and lose by 31 points. And they didn't welcome a quality team into their house and have them get spanked in their own house by 15 points in a game in which they were never in control of. Of course, I'm talking about Ohio State and Oklahoma. So if you look at from all of those vantage points, that's why the committee gave the final nod to Alabama. And that's where I got to leave it. As you just heard, by the way, in the update that Jim gave to the Rockets, are indeed going to be playing again in the Dollar General Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, as the MAC Conference champion. They have accepted that bid as of this afternoon. So congratulations to Jason Candle and the boys. And we're going to have Jason Candle on the program tomorrow to talk about that and much more. So until then, enjoy Drive Time coming up next right here.